All right, I call the House File 3 Conference Committee to order. Welcome. And we will start with introductions, and I will start. We'll go to my left. I'm Dennis Smith, representing Maple Grove. Senator?
Eric Pratt. I represent Senate District 55, which is Scott County, so I have the communities of Prior Lake, Shakopee, Jordan, and six townships.
I'm Lexi Stengel, Senate Counsel for the Senate Transportation Committee.
Krista Boyd, Senate Fiscal Analyst for Transportation.
David Larson, Committee Administrator.
Scott Newman, Senate District 18.
Ann Russ, Senate District 45.
Representative Gene Pulowski, about half of Winona County.
Paul Torkelson, Olive Brown, most of Redwood, and part of Renville County.
I'm Nathan Hopkins. I'm with Nonpartisan House Research.
Andrew Lee, House Fiscal Staff for Transportation.
Matt Burris with House Research.
Nicole Reinke, Committee Legislative Assistant.
Callie Lehman, Committee Administrator for the GOP Caucus.
Lauren Sweeney, GOP Research.
And Laura Taylor, GOP Research.
Great. All right. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. All right. Let's start with the side-by-side walkthrough with House Research and Senate Counsel. Is Mr. Burris, would you like to lead?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'll be walking through the language in the side-by-side, and you'll see one of the items in your packet has both the House and Senate language arranged in two different columns. So that's this document. The House language is going to be on the left side. Senate language is on the right. Commenting briefly at a high level, the House and Senate language has a number of same or very similar with technical differences provisions. Both House and Senate set up a dual-track arrangement for compliant and non-compliant IDs, and both have some provisions around implementation and conforming changes to meet the federal real ID requirements. And then there are a couple of other provisions where the House and Senate differ. So beginning through the, to get into the language of the side-by-side, Section 1 in both House and Senate is a definition in the driver's license chapter of a non-compliant license or a non-compliant identification card. And these would be licenses and identification cards that don't meet all of the requirements of the Real ID Act and the federal regulations that were adopted in conformance with the Real ID Act. Section 2, and that's identical language between House and Senate. Sections 2 and 3 are also definitions with identical language, identifying reference to the Real ID Act and referencing a federal definition in federal regulations for temporary lawful status. And then Section 4 establishes some additional requirements around background checks and extends the background check requirements beyond just enhanced driver's licenses to staff of the Department of Public Safety who are able to issue driver's licenses more generally. The extension is also to driver's license agents. And House and Senate are substantially the same with a small technical difference.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Brown.
Thank you. How do you do this?
You're on.
Okay. Would you... there are a lot of people who don't think anything about this bill is technical. Would you explain where the language differs with regard to Section 4, leading you to call it a technical difference, please?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ress, the difference is on 2.13, line 2.13 on the House side, 2.13 on the Senate side, and that difference is in the word drivers using an apostrophe S as opposed to okay. S apostrophe.
Thank you. And Mr. Burris, Mr. Chairman, are we going to adopt a preferred apostrophe?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, I guess that's a question for the conference committee. We hadn't.
Mr. Chairman, probably early on we should do that, and then we won't have me bringing up questions like this.
Very well, Senator. Yes, we will put that on the list.
I just think that's a, you know, it's just a difference, but we want to make sure that we don't have to revisit it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Burris, please.
And Mr. Chair, I might note that we can come back with a nonpartisan staff recommendation on a number of the technical differences if you wanted to, you know, sort of finalize those at you know, the next meeting or some point in the near future. And then on R2, Section 5 on both House and Senate side, are a couple of provisions around actually directing the department to conform with Real ID Act requirements. So the Subdivision 1 establishes a definition of the concept of a federal change. This would be a change in federal law, either through rules or U.S. code regarding the Real ID Act. And it's pretty broad-based, anywhere from general requirements to processes, policies, and procedures of the federal agencies. And it identifies a couple of examples as well in that definition. And I'll just highlight two. One is a change in what's an official purpose. And this is at the top of R3. So it's 3.24 to 3.25 on both the House and Senate language. And that official purpose is the term used in federal regulations around what a Real ID compliant card is used for, federal access to secured buildings, in the future, boarding commercially regulated aircraft, and the like. So a change in that official purpose would be one of the types of changes that's captured by this definition. Another example is a change in the machine-readable technology, so the barcode, that's requirements around the barcode that has to go on the ID. Subdivision 2 on both the House and Senate language, which is identical, by the way, establishes the dual track. So it directs the department to meet the requirements of the Real ID Act by issuing a compliance driver's license or identification card, but also establish a card offering that is non-compliant, so in the sense that it wouldn't meet all requirements of the Real ID Act. And then finally, it also clarifies that the department would continue to offer enhanced driver's licenses and enhanced identification cards. Subdivision 3 establishes one of the limitations on the Department of Public Safety around Real ID compliance, and it limits compliance to those requirements that are in the Real ID Act as of the effective date of when this provision would go into effect. And it would prevent the Commissioner of Public Safety from making any change to implement any further modifications that are done federally if a state is required to go along with a federal change. And the House and Senate language is similar. There is a difference in that the Senate language specifically identifies rules or regulations that have been federally promulgated, whereas the House just refers to the Real ID Act more generally. And then also on page R3, Subdivision 4 on both House and Senate side establishes a notification requirement that the Department of Public Safety would need to let various legislative committees know about any impending or completed federal change. And then on page R4, Subdivision 5 in this section, and that's identical language. Subdivisions 4 and 5 are identical between House and Senate. Subdivision 5 is a statutory construction establishing that when the term license or driver's license or instruction permit or administrative identification card is used, unless there's a specific differentiation, that term refers to all of the offerings of licenses and identification cards. And further, that a non-compliant card is separate from enhanced driver's license. This is to clarify that there are really three core types of card offerings. Section 6 on both the House and Senate language creates a prohibition on issuing driver's licenses or identification cards if somebody has a temporary lawful admission period that's expiring within 30 days of the date of the application. That's identical language between House and Senate. Section 4 makes some technical changes in the application requirements when somebody comes in to apply for a driver's license or identification card. The substantive language is in paragraph B, and it requires all applicants to sign the application and establishes a penalty of perjury for false applications. This is identical between House and Senate. And starting on R4 with the main language, extending into page R5 is a fee schedule provision. And House and Senate differ in approach but have a similar effect. The House, well, actually, let me hit the Senate language first. You can see on page R5 a couple of additions in setting fees specifically for the various types of driver's licenses and identification cards. And those are fees that are set at the same as the corresponding non-compliant driver's license. And that extends into pages R6 and R7. So the Senate language has the listing in that table for non-compliant cards. And then the House language is on page R7, lines 7.1 to 7.3, which expresses the same principle just in that new paragraph G. And then on R7, Section 9, both House and Senate, this section for both establishes the requirements around the application and what kind of information needs to be provided when a license or identification card is applied for. Both House and Senate language includes some restructuring of the language. It moves a little bit of the language around enhanced driver's licenses to a separate paragraph. Both establish a little bit of technical restructuring as well on spaces in the application form to request various endorsements, and anatomical gift endorsement or anatomical gift information as current law is being restructured, as well as a designation on document retention that we'll get to at a later point. And the more substantive language really starts on R8 in paragraph B, and this adds in a requirement of satisfactory evidence that goes along with the application. Both House and Senate require evidence around identity, date of birth, and legal name change. And then both House and Senate also require evidence around address and social security number or related documentation for applicants for a compliant, Real ID compliant card. House and Senate differ with regard to lawful status. So on the House language, you'll see on line 8.5, lawful status is required, or evidence demonstrating lawful status is required for all applicants. And on line 8.18 on the Senate side, lawful status is also, evidence of that is also required, but it's only for Real ID compliant card applications. There's also a difference in requiring evidence of principal residence address in Minnesota, and the House includes renewal on line 8.8, whereas that's not required in the Senate language. And then moving on to page R10, Section 10, both House and Senate create a requirement of the Department of Safety, Public Safety, to provide summary information that is mailed out in conjunction with renewal cards and is also required to go on a department's website. And there's a couple of provision differences between the House and Senate in this section. Both require the summary information. The Senate has some additional requirements around identifying the physical address where somebody can get a copy of the summary, as well as a couple of additional items in the summary information that has to be identified. And then starting at the near the bottom of page R10, this is section 11 for both the House and Senate language. This is a long section that has a couple of subdivisions that lay out what kinds of documentation is acceptable to provide the required evidence when somebody comes in for a driver's license or identification card. So subdivision 1 is identical between House and Senate, and this establishes kind of an interpretation element to the setting that this whole section effectively overrides any administrative rules if there's a conflict between what is being established in the section and what's already in administrative rules. And this also sets this whole section as only being for compliance card applications. So someone applying for a non-compliant driver's license or identification card would have the same requirements that are under current law that are established in administrative rule. Somebody applying for a Real ID compliant card would need to provide evidence that meets the requirements in the lists that are being laid out in this section. So subdivision 2 sets out what kinds of documents are acceptable for proving identity as well as proving date of birth. And here there are a couple of differences between House and Senate. The Senate language specifies a little bit more in depth on passport, identifying passport booklets or passport cards. That's on 10.21 to 10.22. And then there's also an issue in the House language, which you really see on page R12. This is 10.30 to 10.31, that clause 11. And this is sort of a miscodification or kind of the unintended location of where that requirement should go. So that's this refers to a document that's issued by a federal agency demonstrating lawful status. And that's actually intended to go into the evidence of lawful status section or subdivision 3, as opposed to this listing for identity and date of birth. So you can see that there's similar language on the Senate side of that kind of document being acceptable to demonstrate lawful status, and that's in subdivision 3 in the Senate language.
Mr. Burris?
Senator Thatcher.
So if I understand that summary, we have similar language, we just have it in different places. Is that correct?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, yes, as written, the House language establishes a document for proving identity that doesn't really correspond to identity proof. So I guess what I'm trying to express is that the my understanding of the intended House approach is really that document would go along with proof of evidence type documents rather than proof of identity type documents.
Senator Pratt?
No, that's fine.
Get back.
So then moving to subdivision 3, this is the documents for proving lawful status. And that refers back to that same list of identity, and as we were just discussing on the Senate side, also includes a document that is federally issued to demonstrate status, lawful status. Subdivision 4 covers evidence for social security number or related information, and then also on and that's identical between House and Senate. And then also on page R12 and extending for a ways is subdivision 5, and this is a listing of types of documents to demonstrate residence in Minnesota. And with this list, it's two forms of documentation from the list, whereas in the others, it's one document. And this list largely follows what's currently in administrative rules for enhanced IDs and driver's licenses. There is a difference or two between the House and Senate. One is on page R13, lines 12.9 to 12.10 on the House side, 12.20 to 12.22 on the Senate side. This is a statement issued from an assisted living or nursing home facility. The Senate language requires registration or licensing of the facility that issues the statement. So it's a bit more specificity on that point. And then on page R14, subdivision 6 is identical between House and Senate. And this authorizes the Department of Public Safety to grant variances from most of the identity requirements that are laid out in the previous lists. Lawful status would only be for the variance in proving lawful status, I should say, would only be for demonstrating U.S. citizenship. And that brings us to the bottom of page R14, section 12, which is a Senate-only provision.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 12 on the bottom of page R14 on the Senate side has the effect of allowing a person to apply for and obtain a non-compliant license, an enhanced driver's license, or a real ID compliant driver's license at any location throughout the state. The change there is that currently you can get an enhanced driver's license only in 14 locations.
And then, Mr. Chair and members, page R15, section 12 on the House side, section 13 on the Senate side, again, has identical language, and this sets up what the marking requirements are for driver's licenses and requires a distinguishing marking for both compliance and non-compliant licenses, as well as enhanced driver's licenses to be able to tell them apart through some type of marking. The marking details aren't specified. That'd be something that the department would figure out. I believe a number of states use a star to identify compliance IDs and driver's licenses. There is a marking of not for federal identification that would be required for non-compliant licenses and ID cards. Temporary status would need to be marked as temporary, and there's also some language around how truncation of longer names would work.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Russ.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These instructions to the department, they can make these decisions without resorting to rulemaking. Is that correct?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, yes, I would expect that the department could implement the marking aspects without rulemaking.
Thank you.
Unless the department had something else to say on the matter, but we hadn't heard anything to that effect. I might also note that both House and Senate language eliminates what is currently paragraph D regarding some security features, and some of that language is substantially reproduced in another security section later in the bill. So it's something of a technical centralization of security license and ID security requirements. Section 13 on the House side, Section 14 on the Senate side, on page R16 of the side-by-side, sets up the same marking requirements that we were just going over, and this is for identification cards. And this is identical between House and Senate. And then on page R17, Section 14 House, Section 15 Senate, discusses or lays out what the expiration date is for identification cards. Under current law, some identification cards, those that are issued to applicants who are age 65 or older, are valid for the lifetime of the applicant. And the one among the changes in setting the expiration date is to set that expiration to instead be 8 years after issuance of the card in order to comply with Real ID Act requirements. And that would be for someone applying for a compliance identification card. A non-compliant identification card for those applicants age 65 or older would continue to be valid for a lifetime. There's also a provision on having the expiration date for somebody with lawful status to be the last day of the person's legal stay in the United States. And then Section 15 on the House side, or Section 16 on the Senate side, is the security features changes. This is somewhat reproduction and somewhat addition of the types of requirements around security features. Under current law, this provision is just for enhanced driver's licenses and identification cards, and the language changes are to broaden that to all types. Section 15 and 16 is identical between House and Senate. Section 16 and 17, also on page R18, establish or put a limitation on a religious objection provision. So under current law, someone who has a religious objection to having a photograph taken can not have a photograph taken. That's not permissible under Real ID, so exception is limited down just to non-compliant licenses, so that somebody applying for a Real ID compliant license or identification card would need to get a photo taken. Starting at the bottom of page R18, section 17 on the House side, section 18 on the Senate side, limits when a tribal identification card can be used in application for driver's licenses and ID cards, so that the ID card, the tribal ID card, would not be considered a document in proving identity for applying for a compliant Real ID card. And this is another identical provision between House and Senate. Section 18 on the House side, Section 19 on the Senate side, establishes a couple of requirements around the MNLAR system, the Driving Vehicle Services system for both licensing and vehicle registration that's currently being developed and stood up. And there are a couple of aspects to this. It limits access to the data, requires an audit trail, sets requirements around when somebody loses access privileges, and requires a biennial audit. And there is a difference between House and Senate on this. In situations where the somebody has gained access without authorization, the matter has to be forwarded to a county attorney in the case of the House language, and to the appropriate prosecuting authority for prosecution in the Senate.
Senator Best.
Thank you. I have another question about the two identification cards that are not suitable for Real ID. Those are federal. Those are not specific to Minnesota. Is that correct? The federal law does not allow a tribal identification card to be used to get Real ID, nor does the federal law allow someone to get a Real ID without a full face photo. Is that correct?
Mr. Burris?
Or is this a Minnesota thing, or is it decided state by state?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rust, both of those are for compliance with the federal Real ID.
This is a federal thing, not a state thing.
Yes.
Thank you.
Finishing up then the security and audit requirements, there's also a technical difference with the House having an extraneous reference to Minnesota statutes that's not necessary when the language is codified, and that's on 18.19. And then page R20 Section 19 on the House side, Section 20 on the Senate side. This sets a requirement for the Department of Public Safety in cases where the department intends to retain either a physical copy or an image of a birth certificate. And if the department decides to use that retention process, the department is then required to notify applicants of the retention procedure and allow the applicant to actually designate that the document not be retained in either physical or electronic form. And in such situations, the department would not be able to retain a copy of the birth certificate, but would still pull that data into the driver's licensing information system. So the data would still be collected in MNLARS. This between House and Senate language is a technical difference as to whether cardholder is one word or two. And then R20, Section 20 on the House side, Section 21 on the Senate side, creates a prohibition on the Department of Public Safety being able to share data around non-compliant driver's licenses and identification cards. And this is one of the substantive differences really between compliant versus non-compliant driver's license and ID cards. So one thing is on marking, and the second thing is on the kind of data that the Department of Public Safety can share. So with a non-compliant card, electronic data that's not already being disseminated outside the state, no further data could be disseminated, no further electronic verification or validation type systems could be brought in for non-compliant cards. The only exceptions to that would be compliance with the driver's license compact and commercial driver's licenses. This has similar, pretty much identical language between House and Senate. Again, there's a driver's apostrophe S versus driver's S apostrophe technical difference. Section 21 on page R21 also deals with data practices, and this is more of a substantive difference between the House and Senate. On the House side, and this goes to firearms data, the House side prohibits the Department of Public Safety from sharing any data regarding the firearm safety designation that goes on a driver's license. And the House language in paragraph B also has a broad-based prohibition on sharing data related to firearms purchase and other actions related to firearms.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Vest.
Thank you. Are those two provisions, which are similar, are they common in other states' real ID statutes? Or is this something specific to a Minnesota concern? How common is it in other states that there's a specific prohibition against sharing firearms data?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, I'm not familiar with whether other states have this type of provision commonly or not. I wouldn't classify this as something that's part of the Real ID compliance package from the perspective of the federal perspective, but I'm not sure what other states have done around that. That's something that we could look into.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any particular problem with it. I just wondered if it's unusual or is it very similar to how other states have approached either sharing or prohibiting the sharing of firearms data, just for information, not trying to make a case for it or against it. Just want to know.
Okay? Understood. We'll have staff look into that. Thank you, Senator.
And then, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, also on page R21, Section 22 on the House side, Section 23 on the Senate side, goes to the expiration of driver's licenses, the expiration date. There's a technical conforming change in paragraph A. The main language is in paragraph D on page R22. And this adds in a similar provision as we discussed earlier on the expiration of a driver's license for somebody who has a temporary lawful status. That would be, the last day of somebody's legal stay in the U.S. or a year after issuance if that date is not identified. And then sections 23 and 24, also on page R22, move into the implementation provisions, and these remaining provisions aren't codified into Minnesota statutes. This would be session law language if it were enacted. Subdivision 1 on both House and Senate defines Real ID Act. Subdivision 2 establishes a deadline on the department for implementation. So this is where the October 1, 2018 date is set as the date by which the department is directed to fully comply with the Real ID Act requirements and begin issuing compliant driver's licenses and identification cards. The language between House and Senate on this is identical, and for both, it's a no later than October 1, so it creates the possibility of implementation sooner. And it also requires notification to the legislature, a couple of different legislative committees. Subdivision 3, again, is identical between House and Senate and prevents the department from requiring somebody to come in sooner than their usual renewal cycle to get a replacement driver's license or identification card. And then subdivision 4 is a difference in policy between the House and Senate. The House language creates a free card or an exemption from some of the fees associated with driver's license and identification card renewals. And the core fee of kind of the baseline fee for that goes along with each renewal as well as the filing fee are part of what would be free. And it's provided for those who meet a couple of requirements, somebody who already has a driver's license or ID card and it had been issued prior to when Minnesota started issuing compliant ID cards or driver's licenses as an option. And if the ID card is expiring, that is some point after the federal cutoff date of the kind of hard cutoff of when U.S. Department of Homeland Security has indicated they will no longer accept, under an extension or not, they'll no longer accept any non-compliant licenses. So the House language is if somebody meets those requirements, to provide that renewal without a fee. And then, if you want to, I'm Ms. Singh, I might want to just touch on the Senate approach with this.
Certainly. Ms. Singh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Senate approach takes that same group of people that Mr. Burris described, and instead of giving them a free identification card, will extend the expiration date on their driver's license by 2 years. So individuals are still showing up and paying for a driver's license, but they do get that 2-year extension.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator West.
The implications of that, and for Senator Pratt as well, in that difference, is that were the decisions made there based on fiscal considerations or convenience for the cardholder? But I think that's a very interesting distinction, and I wonder where the rationale came, Chairman Smith and Chairman Pratt. Is it a fiscal difference, or is it an amenity?
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Russ. I would say it's both. There will be a difference in there will be a difference in the fiscal note in the cost to the state of issuing a free driver's licenses versus getting the fee. There was also a concern by deputy registrars of getting their fee collected up front versus reimbursed by the state. And I think there was some ambiguity of whether or not how that reimbursement would happen. And so in order to look at the overall fiscal cost of implementation, and as far as having something that worked better with the deputy registrars, the Senate went a different direction in extending the expiration dates, but collecting a fee.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pratt, but the free card doesn't cost the taxpayers anything. Is that correct, Chairman Smith?
Senator Pratt?
I'm talking about the House provision now.
I'm not sure. Representative Ferguson, do you have...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I've been thinking about this issue because as Chair of Transportation, of course, any changes to the fiscal situation would directly affect our dealings with the DPS. So I have a proposal that is yet to be, we haven't got the numbers worked up yet as to what effect it would actually have on the finances, but I can describe it briefly for you. First off, anyone getting a regular license, nothing would change. You'd get your regular license on the four-year cycle that you're on currently. If you are interested in getting a Real ID compliant license, you would come in for your license. If it was on the regular date, no change. You'd just pay your four-year fee. But if you came in early, say your license expired in 2019 and you were coming in 2018, in other words, you were a year early, you would get a five-year license, so your expiration date would be the same as it would have been had you been on a normal cycle. And I would propose that you'd pay a small extra fee because you're getting a five-year license instead of a four-year license.
Additionally, Mr. Lee has some information.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I'll be covering in a little bit more detail later when I go over the fiscal impacts of this, but okay. There is a essentially a cost to the operating account for giving out free licenses. There's just essentially foregone revenue to the one of the DPS operating funds.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mr. Burse?
Mr. Chair, members, that brings us to page R24 in the side-by-side. This is Section 24 on the House side, Section 25 on the Senate side, and this is an instruction of the revisor and moving a couple of provisions that's related to anatomical donations. It's a technical shift. And then the next couple of sections on R24 are Senate-only provisions.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 26 on the Senate side on page R24 is an appropriation. The Senate appropriates just over $3 million in fiscal year 19 from the driver services operating account to the commissioner to implement the provisions of this act. Section 27 is another Senate-only provision, and this section would, if there is a change in federal Real ID provisions or if there is a change to the official purpose, for example, if the federal government were to add additional reasons to the definition of official purpose, the state of Minnesota would, 1 year later, or in the following June, excuse me, cease issuing Real ID compliant licenses. The department would then prepare a report on how to repeal the state provisions of Real ID and submit that to the legislature. So essentially, what this would do would be to put a stop on issuing Real ID compliant licenses unless the legislature took action in the meantime.
And then, Mr. Chair and members, Section 25 is a repealer of the original implementation ban that had been enacted in 2009. And was amended to allow for reporting last year. That's identical between House and Senate. And then finally, Section 26 is an effective date provision, Section 29 on the Senate side, I should say. And that's making most of the language go into effect the day following final enactment. And there's an application clause aspect to that as well. And the difference between House and Senate just refers is due to the difference in section numbering because there's additional section on the Senate language. And that is the end of the side-by-side, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions by conferees for either House or Senate counsel? Seeing none, let's move to the fiscal note and DVS walkthrough. And let's start with Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, if you look in your folder, you should see a subfolder named Fiscal Notes. There should be two fiscal notes in there. They look like this. They have a table in the front. I have one for the House position, House File 3, and one for Senate File 166, the 4th Engrossment. Also in that folder should be a legal-sized piece of paper that looks like this. And this shows the impact on the DVS fund balances based off of the two fiscal notes. So I'll walk through the legal size sheet briefly and explain how the proposed legislation would potentially impact the two funds. So going back to, if you look at the legal size sheet, the first box on the far right, and I apologize for the small typeface, far left, is the current law estimate of the amount of money that the Vehicle Services Fund will receive and that the Driver Services Fund will receive, and the current law spending, as well as the reserve and balance amounts. And stepping back, the way the Driver and Vehicle Services funds operate is the DVS receives fee revenue from transactions of vehicles or attaining driver's licenses or a few other transactions. That fee revenue is put into two different operating accounts, which are then made as direct appropriations as part of a transportation budget bill for 2 years to operate the department. So it's essentially a fee-based department, although I should know that Vehicle Services also receives about $8 million a year from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. So the first box on the far left-hand side shows just the current law, the balances forward, the amounts that the department is about to receive, and I should note that my estimates for both the Vehicle Services Fund and the Driver Services Fund revenues are static. I believe they have been growing in certain years, but since these funds aren't forecasted as part of the budget in February, I just assumed a static level. And then you can see the spending. So the spending on vehicle services is on line 9 where it says base appropriations. And then for driver services on line 26. So this is before any law changes. And then after that, there are balances in both accounts and a certain amount that the agency maintains so for cash flow purposes or other potential contingencies. However, the agency cannot spend those funds without a direct appropriation from the legislature. Moving one box to the right, you can see the House position. And on line 22, you can see the impact to the Driver Services Fund of having those free driver's licenses. So the department estimates that about it would lose revenue for about $10 million a year for fiscal 2019 and 2020, and then about $5 million in fiscal 2021. Then you can see on line 29, the additional real ID costs, and there's a footnote there. This is the amount that based on the fiscal note for House File 3, that the agency estimates it would cost to implement the legislation to implement real ID. I should note that this is slightly different from the report from the agency a year ago, in which they noted that January 2018 implementation date would have an annual cost of about $30,000 a year. In the most recent fiscal note, they're assuming that there would be an actual cost of close to $3.5 million in the first year, and then close to $3 million in the second year. So as just looking at the fund balance statements on that second box to the right, there would be essentially no money left in the driver services fund from the balance by the end of fiscal 2019. Some of the balance from the vehicle services fund could be shifted over to accommodate that, And then you can see on the bottom on line 35, the driver services balance is a negative. And again, there's potential for resources to be shifted over from vehicle services to cover that. Then on the next box over, there's a combination of both the bill that's currently in front of the committee and the House position on the transportation bill. The transportation bill also spends money as part of governor's initiatives within for driver and vehicle services, and spends down the account balances for the operations of the MNLARS registration system. So you can see on the next box over added costs for both vehicle services and driver services in combination with the costs for the House position on House File 3 for Real ID. And in this scenario, the fund balance would be drawn down to negative by the end of fiscal 2019 for both funds. And so there would essentially be no reserve balance left in either vehicle or driver services. One quick thing that I'll note on the implementation costs. Currently in the House position, there isn't a direct appropriation or an additional appropriation for operating for the implementation of the Real ID. So we would essentially be instructing the agency to implement without giving them an additional appropriation, which you could then assume that the agency would then have to redirect resources away from other programs that it's doing in order to implement Real ID. The last box on this page shows the Senate position on Real ID plus the Senate transportation bill. I should note that there's a bit of a difference in the Senate transportation bill, and they did not implement most of the governor's changes or spend down the balance like the House did to implement MNLARS. So the finances are, or the spending is a little bit different. In addition, rather than the free driver's licenses on the House position, the Senate position has the six-year renewal in which in which case, based off of the fiscal note, the agency estimates that they will have additional revenue to the driver services fund as more people receive six-year licenses. But then in years in the future, that may become a little lumpy as there's kind of a different sort of a wave effect that gets created with that. So that is the fiscal summary. If there's any questions.
Great. Anything to add from Ms. Boyd?
Mr. Chair, no. I believe Mr. Lee did a bang-up job of summarizing the Senate position.
Any questions about the fiscal note or fund? All right. Seeing none, would the department like to come down and speak about any issues we discussed thus far? Or the letter that was sent out in the last couple of days? Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith and Senator Pratt, co-chairs and members. My name is Mona Doman. I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety, and I don't have a prepared statement. I think that we have worked with both of you quite extensively throughout the session thus far and in previous years. But you all have a copy of my letter, and if you have any questions, we're here to answer any of those questions that you might have at this time.
Any questions for the Commissioner? Representative Pulski.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner. Prior to the sending of these letters, I believe Governor Dayton said he would sign a Real ID bill if it got to his desk. Then your letter arrived, and then there was a subsequent other documentation from Public Safety. So is it still the Governor's intent that he will sign a Real ID bill if it gets to his desk, or are we now going to have to make sure we have agreement with these two departments before he signs it?
Commissioner Doman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, my understanding is that the governor has indicated, and in fact I was just driving back from Brainerd this morning and he was on WCCO with Chad Hartman, and he did say that he would sign a Real ID bill if it came to his desk. He did note that the differences have to be decided in this committee. in order for a bill to be presented to him.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for the commissioner? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on any topic? Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, this is for both chairs. Is it the intent of the chairs at subsequent meetings that we would have a proposal from one house or the other before us so that we would actually see something concrete to discuss? Is that the intent of the two chairs?
Representative, it is. We've been speaking about that significantly, and that is our intent.
Okay, thank you.
All right, seeing any other note or questions or comments, I would like to thank our staff for the side-by-side and the financial review, and we look forward to working on same and similar. The next time we meet, unless we reconvene today, Senator Pratt will have the gavel in his hand. With that, the meeting is adjourned.